Welcome to We Are the Watchers. Tom. And Leah. Are the Watchers.
Welcome to We Are the Watchers, episode 35, Tom. That means that if we were hockey players, we could play Masters, a.k.a. Vets. So that's
good. Wow.
Yeah. Weekend away with the girls.
The show's officially older than I am.
Oh, it had to get there at some point.
Isn't that exciting? I feel like I'm an interstellar and my child is now older than I am.
Spoilers? Or we're not going to...
I don't know. That's the interstellar noise.
It's, the sound
it's years old. Yeah.
Steph is back. Steph.
Ciao.
Hi, Tidy.
Oh, she's playing
Hi.
Italian.
How are you going?
Very well, thank you. I can see the smile on your face. I know exactly why. It's because we have got, what should we call you? The Australia's answer to Gilead's know-it-all.
What a great intro.
Working title.
Working title. The host of Eyes on Gilead podcast from SBS, Fiona, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Thank you so much
for coming
in. This is very exciting.
Oh, lots of fun.
Well, we've had about a week to get over the finale, and we will have a big chat about it at the end, but I'm assuming you've got a few theories as to what's happening next season? A
couple of theories,
Brilliant.
Yeah, where it's left off, yeah.
Any rumours?
There are some rumours.
Okay.
I also interviewed Aunt Lydia on the weekend. I'm
just
going to drop that right there and then.
Okay.
And Dad was in the country. She's not anymore. But yeah, we had a good old debrief.
Nice.
Coming up. This
very
is very exciting.
Exciting.
Because you did say last week in the podcast that there would be an episode or two after.
Yes, we're doing a big finale one where we're recapping the entire series.
Yes. Fantastic.
Season and then a few
wild You've had some great guests on this.
We've been lucky,
this season.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, costume designer, directors, fabulous listening to them.
Well, these are people that you don't usually get to hear speak.
No,
you know,
exactly.
Out loud, you know, out loud, just in their clothing if they're the designer. So we'll get all to handmade stuff a little bit later on. We've got a couple of news stories. Tom, I know I've got a couple. Have you got a couple?
You bet I do.
Yeah, he usually brings the news. What have you got to fire at us?
Oh, well, first things first, this weekend I'm very excited. San Diego Comic-Con is happening,
Ooh.
Which is the pinnacle of nerddom each year.
So why is the San Diego one the big guy?
Essentially because it's so close to Hollywood. So all the studios go down and trot out new shows because most shows will kick off in September. So it's a good chance for them to go and maybe show the pilot or the premiere, get everyone excited about things. Similar with all the Hollywood films, you know, Marvel aren't doing this year. Normally they have ruled San Diego Comic-Con because they've done a massive panel in Hall H, which holds about 7,500 people or something like that.
Wow.
And that's where they'll show the first trailers or announce the coming films. But without any spoilers, because of the events of Avengers Infinity War, they decided to take the year off this year. Mm-hmm. And that way everyone can continue to keep guessing.
So what's that going to do for numbers at the Comic-Con this year?
Nothing.
Okay.
There's still plenty more to do. Mm. I've been very impressed. The Good Place are heading down for the first time. Yes, and they've been put in a smaller venue, so they intentionally put up a thing on their site saying, if you're intending to come and see our panel, register now, so you can definitely get a spot. And I reckon they're just jockeying for a better venue. You know, look how many people we've got wanting to come along and see us. So there'll be some really cool news that'll come out, things that people aren't expecting. I expect that Warner Brothers are going to announce or maybe more news about this Jared Leto Joker Origins film. They were saying yesterday Frances McDormand turned down the role of Joker's mother. So there's a lot of mystery surrounding this project at the moment. So I think Warner Brothers are coming off a rough few years with their attempts of the DC movies.
Yep.
They've got Wonder Woman 2 that they'll definitely show a trailer or some sort of footage for.
Yep.
And then, I think they're going to look at their next stuff, hopefully not focus on, you know, Suicide Squad 2 or the things that no one's really clamoring for.
Is that really going to happen, though?
Well, I think they'll get around to it eventually, but before then they'll do a Joker's, and Margot Robbie's been saying that there's a script floating around for Birds of Prey, which is a female-focused team in the DC universe quite often will have some combination of Catwoman, Poison Ivy, Harley Quinn, a lot of the more roguish female characters.
It's basically a whole heap of scary spices in a new Spice Girls.
Yeah, kind of.
In Spice World.
I would be down with Spice World 2 starring DC supervillainesses.
I don't think you'd be the only one. I mean, morbid fascination, if anything. I would get people watching.
As long as Meatloaf comes back as the bus driver,
I'm happy. I was going to say Richard E. Grant would probably want to look in there as well.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem too busy these days. He had enough time to do Logan last year.
Yeah, that's true. He did pop into that, didn't he?
He was in that was a couple of seasons ago. He was in a couple of girls episodes.
Sure.
That's right.
Remember that.
He's been doing Chance.
That's right.
I think he's got some time.
Okay, well, book him in.
Clear your schedule, Richard.
So I will have plenty of news to share next week.
Cool.
For the debrief of what's happened. I'm pretty excited for that.
We better set aside some extra time for that.
Yeah.
It's all right, we won't have Handmaids to talk about.
This is true.
Yeah.
There's like no new shows this week. Just wait.
It's okay. It's fine. You can always go to Video Easy or Blockbuster.
I've been watching stuff. It's okay. Also, there was huge news around Black Widow from the Marvel Universe. They've finally announced that not only is there a film coming, a solo film, but the director is from Canberra.
Whoa.
What?
Her name's Kate Shortland.
Yeah.
And she's done films like Law, L-O-R-E, and Somersault, and I want to say Berlin Syndrome. Is that right?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. See, I've got someone here that can back me up here. This is great. Normally I'm floundering. I'm hoping for the best. This is huge news because people have been clamoring, asking for this film for years and really giving Marvel a lot of stick as to why they don't have a female-focused film.
Yep.
And in the last month, Marvel's gone really out of their way saying, look, this Black Widow film's coming, that we've been having discussions with a lot of the females in the films to potentially do A-Force, which is a Avengers spin-off that only had females.
Yep.
And that their intention is to have at least 50% of all the heroes on screen be females.
Fantastic. Yeah.
So that's great.
Yeah, well, now's the time to jump on it.
And also Ant-Man and the Wasp has been doing very well.
Oh,
and that's
so
sort
good.
Of 50% female superhero movie.
So. Yeah, I took Shay to see it. Regular listeners will know Shay from a few weeks ago, my five-year-old daughter. It was her first Marvel movie at the cinemas, and she absolutely loved it. And she walked out afterwards and ran up to the poster and crouched down beneath the Wasp doing her own hero pose, which is great.
That's really cute.
But she was telling me at bed that her favourite character was Ava, who was the villain ghost. So I really liked her. She had a good story. I understood she had pain.
Aww.
So she wasn't all bad.
Gosh.
I was like, that's pretty good insight for a five-year-old.
Right?
I'm really, really impressed with that. So,
it's a clever thing.
We've got a movie reviewer at our hands here.
Well, look, the way I explained it to people with Black Panther was that I really enjoyed it, but I understood how important it would be for other people seeing themselves on screen, something like that. Because I can remember the first time seeing Tobey Maguire on screen as Spider-Man and being like, that's me. That's my thing. So to be able to take my daughter to see films like this is so huge.
Mm.
Wonder Woman, I didn't have the same connection to take her to because there was a lot more violent, there was a little more adult, this sort of stuff. Whereas this is a proper family film. Mm. It feels like you keep waiting for Rick Moranis to pop up in the background and make it properly Honey, I Shrunk the Kids 3.
Well, it came out at a really great time for particularly Aussie kids because school holidays are wrapping up as we speak pretty much. And I actually just saw that Hotel Transylvania 3 topped the box office over the last week, which is great news.
And that actually leads me into my second, my other story, which is that wasn't a great weekend for The Rock.
No.
The Skyscraper came out and has kind of killed his hot streak a little bit.
Mm.
We'll see what effects it has.
25 million or something? It wasn't much, for a Rock movie.
It wasn't a great showing. Mm. I imagine that their timing of release played into that. Like, why would you want to go up against Incredibles 2, Jurassic World, Ant-Man? Like, there's just so much else on at the moment that trying to wade in there with something.
That seems to be already known entities. You know, that people know about Jurassic World. People know about Ant-Man.
And they're going for
Incredibles.
It.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so to suddenly go, oh, we've got this new story. Like, we've only got a certain amount of money to give the kids to go to the movies. Mm-hmm. And we're going to give it to something. They're pretty sure that they're gonna like, but
plus there's just so much Rock this year. He's had Jumanji, which was at Christmas. There was Rampage, which I enjoyed as a guilty pleasure, but I like big dumb monster movies, like smash 'em up stuff. I'm very into this one. I don't need to see Die Hard with a prosthetic leg. Like,
yeah,
that's what the film is.
Is it set at Christmas?
Well, that... So, in trailer talk, the Comedy Central roast of Bruce Willis is happening in a few weeks.
Yeah.
It was recorded 2 days ago, and the big story that's come out of it is that he went on a rant of how that's not a Christmas movie.
Okay,
that
wow.
He thinks Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. The writer, the director,
yep.
You know, the people who made the film all say it's a Christmas film. It's set on Christmas Eve. It's a goddamn Christmas movie.
Yeah, if there's Christmas decorations, sorry, you're there.
Yeah, right.
They're having a Christmas party. That's what the drinks are for, that he goes out to the coast. Like,
yeah, he's Bruce. Lost us.
He's become the Grinch.
He's Bruce, yeah.
He's just so cranky about everything all the time.
But isn't that his thing that people
his shtick?
Yeah, people always say he's really hard to interview because he just sits there.
He's in my top three of I never want to interview.
Mm. Who's the other two?
Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
And oh, I don't want to say the other
now
one.
Now go on. You have to.
Don't say Elizabeth Moss. Come on.
No. No, I'm...
It's gone red.
I'm going to leave it.
Okay, and a mysterious person.
Yeah.
Well, I can get into a story that I touched a little bit on when I said Blockbuster and Video Easy. There's one more Blockbuster in America.
And the guy won. So that
He won.
Well, he's been saying in interviews that he's intentionally holding out, trying to be the last Blockbuster on Earth.
Hollow victory, though.
Yeah, I know. What's he going to do with
Where
it?
Where is it?
You know? So it's in Oregon. The other two were in Alaska. And I can kind of understand why the Alaskan ones would have lasted because...
No NBN.
Yeah, that's right. They have no NBN, and ADSL2 doesn't work too well. But you think... I was trying to think about where a video rental store or shop would work still in this day and age, and it would be somewhere remote. I'm thinking in terms of Australia, like... Yeah.
Mining towns.
A mining town or, you know, a caravan park.
I think, like, coastal... Small towns.
You go on holidays and there's always a video store that you can pop into.
And you don't always have reliable Netflix, you know, Wi-Fi for your Netflix or whatever, always VS on demand.
Where else are you going to get your hands on the land before time?
That's so true. Yeah, so priorities. But yeah, he's held out. But to be honest with you, when I read this article, I thought, oh, there's still three left?
Well, there was the one in Alaska with John Oliver bought up big at the Russell Crowe auction, and I would have thought that would keep them going for a little bit longer, but clearly that's one of the ones that's gone under.
Well, they've packed up and gone.
Yeah, right.
With everything.
With no customers.
Exactly.
Still got that cod piece.
Exactly. How great is that, though? I'll always be able to remember that.
Hi, I'm the voiceover guy, and I've got no pants on.
Any other news, Tom?
Yeah, look, just a couple of hot trailers that I saw through the week. One, there's an Adventure Time special coming called Adventure Time X Minecraft.
Oh.
And it's Adventure Time done in blocky style like Minecraft. Because they already do a lot of promotional stuff together and there have been appearances in the game and stuff. But to do a proper episode like that, that's going to be cool.
Yeah, fun. The kids are going to love it.
I'm going to love it.
Tom, sorry.
Adventure Time's real good.
Yeah.
There's some really deep stuff in there, like some big philosophical questions about existence that get asked. Whoa.
Mind blown.
Minecraft blown.
So I'm down with that. The other one that I could be down with, I need to see more, is the trailer for the new Grinch starring Benedict Cumberbatch.
Really?
Yeah, CGI animation style. It's done by Illumination. So it's the guys that did the Minions, Despicable Me. Secret Life of Pets, which was all right, but they had plans for the second one. I don't think they can do them anymore because of some of the stars' behaviour.
Yeah.
And then they also did Sing, which I will scream from the rooftops how good that is.
It's got the animals.
Yeah, it's got Matthew McConaughey as a koala.
I never saw it, but I have... Yeah.
You got the picture in your mind.
Yeah, I remember pretending I knew about it on some sort of airway.
It's really good. It's one of the ones that I've watched multiple times with Shay.
Oh, cool.
But it has some, you know, it's got Taron Egerton. Is that his name? The kid from Kingsman.
Mm-hmm.
So he's voicing a gorilla that can sing perfectly like Elton John, play piano.
With the glasses.
Yeah.
Hidden talents, that's what it's all about.
So
I assume that that's a Christmas thing. I mean, you can't have Grinch Halloween.
Oh, unless they Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, they could.
Which they, you know, might remix
it. Depends what the Grinch gets grumpy about.
It's always Christmas.
He could take whatever he wants.
They should have got Bruce Willis. If
Should have.
Imagine that. It'd be the surliest Grinch. There'd be no rhyming. Kicking of things.
No facial expressions. No. And definitely no hair, whether a screen or not.
Yeah.
Just be a bald Grinch.
No. And lastly, there's a new show that I'm very excited to check out called Mr. Tachyon. And it's it's a guy that wears like a full body suit and a Daft Punk helmet type thing going around and investigating like almost illegal quantum science stuff that
what
stuff this that we should not awesome. Be messing with oh. stuff that's already been outlawed, like genetic tampering yeah. and things like that. I think like I don't know too much okay. other than I've seen this brief trailer. It's on Vice. It looks like it's going to be pretty mm-hmm. out there,
so we can assume we're going to get it soon.
Yeah, it's coming on Viceland.
Yeah,
I think the premise is he's invisible and it's the suit and the helmet that give him some visibility.
Oh, see, there
things
you
like
go.
An invisible man or something.
There you go. It looks like it's going to be convoluted and have its own sort of in-universe story around this investigation.
Yeah, right.
I'm on board.
Yeah. It definitely sounds like the sort of television show that people are going to sit and not do any work at work and just talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exciting.
It is.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
Steph, what have you been watching this week?
I have been watching quite a few things, but I found a new thing on YouTube. I'm new to the YouTube craze, which sounds ridiculous.
You can't
ridiculous.
Even say YouTube, you said YouTube. So that's how
that's
new
That's how
you
new
are.
I am to YouTube. But it's called Worth It, so it's done by the BuzzFeed people.
Okay.
And I have to commend the guys because it has progressed over four seasons. What the premise of the show, or the clip, is that they go to three different places, restaurants, and they try one type of food at three drastically different price points. So one might be worth a couple of dollars, then a medium price one, and then one that's absolutely outrageous. And so they might pick something like dumplings or bread or bacon or wine, you know, all sorts of different things. And they've traveled around the world doing it. So there's a couple of them where they're in Sydney trying fish at the fish markets.
Yeah,
the
right.
ones where they've gone to, you know, Napa Valley and done wine and things like that. But where I commend them is that as the seasons have gone on, they've really taken the time to go into the kitchens and talk to the owners and the head chefs and the executive chefs about how the food's prepared, where is it sourced from, and really getting the ethos of each individual restaurant rather than just, you know, glorifying these really expensive places.
Sure.
And then, you know, they're only 10 minutes long each clip. And then at the end, they choose which one they thought was more worth it versus the price. And it's really interesting because a lot of the time they will choose the cheap one because they're never cheap and nasty, but they might have that more home style feel of the food.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting. And so you can just scroll through and go, oh, yeah, I like that food. I'll watch that video
I'm
today.
I'm a fan of steak. I'm going to watch that.
There is a surprising amount of food out there that is either covered in gold leaf or it's just covered in truffles just purely to put the price up there.
Right. Sure.
You know, you watch it and you think, really? I don't know about a steak with roe and truffles on top and gold leaf. Like, it just becomes too much just to get the price.
Just want a bit of mustard and I'm fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
On the side.
Yeah, don't put it all, don't slather it all over it. So that was called?
It's Worth It.
Okay.
Worth It, BuzzFeed production.
Become a watcher on Facebook. Facebook.com/WeAreTheWatchers.
Fiona, what have you been watching this week?
Well, I've been watching Taboo, the Tom Hardy drama that's just dropped at SBS On Demand, all eight episodes of the first series.
Yes, all of them. Great. Binge fest.
And I do think you probably want to double up, you know, go to the next one as you watch it. Yeah,
okay.
So this one, it did premiere on BBC First a little while back here in Australia, but yeah, it's now available to binge at SBS On Demand. So it's, Tom Hardy, you know, doing his Tom Hardy thing, really. So, you know, the gruff accent.
Is there a voice?
There is, of course.
Can you give a rough approximation of the voice?
I do have the flu, so I'm sort of got a bit of a, like I'm swallowing marbles. But
probably quite close then.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, add a bit of a Cockney accent and
awesome.
It's also the costuming as well. He's
the
got a weird top hat
amazing.
In this one and some tattoos. So it's, you know, gruff Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
Set, I think it's 1814 or so. And, you know, he's mystery man returned for his father's funeral and everyone thinks he's dead. So he you know, saunters in at the funeral and it's, oh, the hell's opened up.
Yeah.
And what's his story? So it's a really mucky, kind of muddy London of the 1800s. Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
Lots
smoggy.
Of secrets.
Perfect.
Yeah, family secrets and a bit of nastiness going on.
Is there any sort of supernaturally stuff happening as well, or is it just sort of all we're scared because we thought you were dead?
Oh, he's not literally from the grave, but it's more he was assumed dead long ago, and here he is showing up. And yeah, it's all set against sort of the East India Company, which is like the mega company of the day.
Yep.
It's a bit of slavery backstory and little incesty as well, potentially.
Look,
so,
I mean, Game of Thrones has sort of put that into the mainstream, so I think we can probably look at it, but still disapprovingly.
Oh, yeah, it's very tut-tut.
Yeah, so you said it's good to sort of get through.
Yeah, you want to binge a couple? Yeah, for sure.
How many episodes are there?
There are 8 in total.
She's already
putting it on my list.
Tick. Yes, exactly. Now, that only recently came out on demand because I saw the ad for it and I went, oh, I'll remember to. And thank you for reminding me because that one looks interesting. Is there, I obviously don't want to give too much away, but is there the possibility of another season?
I don't know, actually.
Okay. Yes.
I don't know whether they've
right.
Oh, okay. I'm pretty sure they're in production.
Okay.
Fantastic.
I saw something mentioned about season 2.
I always like to get pretty excited about things. So.
Yes. Yeah, and also know if you get hooked. Yep. Coming on the pipe as well.
Exactly. Tom, what have you been watching?
A whole ton.
I know.
But plenty of it we're going to get through quick. So last week, there's a few things I mentioned last week that I'll follow up on this week. So Evil Live, I watched it, which was Travis Pastrana from Nitro Circus recreating Evel Knievel's 3 biggest stunts. Guess what? He'd done it.
He's still here with us to tell the tale.
And he did all 3 in one afternoon.
That's insane.
Wow.
Without really breaking a sweat.
Really?
It was quite impressive.
You have to imagine he's practiced it a few times.
Well, he's had a few goes. Now, it was, I'm going to say, 7 seconds of airtime all up of him doing jumps, and it was a 2¾-hour special.
Whoa.
So there was a lot of padding,
a lot of setup.
So let's cross to this expert who knows something about hydraulics and all that sort of stuff. It was for the History Channel. So there was a lot of interesting history about Evel Knievel and the path that stuntmen have taken over the years and how that's diversified. But at the same time, there was just an awful lot of, I don't know. The MC was the host of American Ninja Warrior. So it was, all right, everyone, welcome to Evel Live. There was a lot of that sort of stuff.
That can sometimes make 90 minutes feel quite long.
Yes. Now, when you were talking about that cooking show, that reminded me, because I watched Action Bronson has a show called Fuck That's Delicious.
Sure does.
Yes, and it's great. And the first episode of season 3, which they've been filming in secret for a while, was this week, and it was in Queens, and it was literally that of walking around different bodegas and just like places that you wouldn't expect to get good food from. Or him going, you know, we're going to try this food truck, I've never seen it before, it just pulled up, it looks pretty great.
Yeah,
trying a bunch of Indian, getting lamb innards and brains into a mix, and he's like, I don't want to eat it, but I'm going to try it. Eats it and looks and goes, it's delicious. This sort of stuff. So it was a really interesting take on that. The other one that I mentioned last week was Most Expensivest, which I'm a massive fan of.
I love the name of the title.
Well,
I love it.
I didn't even realize, but during the the break between season 1 and season 2, they held an online competition to find the least expensivest. And that was basically make a video showing however much of a cheap ass you are. And the people that won did a video showing how they organized their entire Valentine's Day for $4.98.
That's impressive.
Of, like, going to KFC and getting a burger, but only getting the fillet so they could take home and eat it with knife and fork and all this sort of stuff, and where they found candles and all this sort of stuff. So they won the prize to go and sit with 2 Chainz and drink the most expensive rosé in the world.
Wow.
And neither of them had ever been on a plane or been on TV.
Really?
And so
they were true cheapskate.
Oh, they just did not do much talking. Good. He did most of the talking. Yeah. But the episode was the most expensive as wet dreams, and it was all the crazy stuff that you would do if you're really rich to do with the water. So there was a guy that makes custom mermaid tails. For between $6,000 and $12,000 US.
Oh, it's very reasonable.
Yeah. Okay. So this is for adults who want to be mermaids, or is that for really rich kids who like a Little Mermaid?
They could be both. Okay. They're custom made, but they are. I would put them in the same category of people that are perhaps not gender fluid, but perhaps fluid around who they base their existence on and want to dress as someone most of the time. Mm-hmm. So that's where it came from. Of this guy had a sexual partner in the past that was very into mermaids, and so helped create a tail. And
can you actually swim in them?
Yeah. Well, these people could, but these people also look chiseled from marble. Like the strongest cores I've ever seen in my life, because they're basically paddling around with, he said 65 pound. I don't know what that is, but that's a lot of kilos. They look really heavy. Each scale is individually made and then stitched on and all this sort of stuff. So it was very impressive. The other one that I'm on board with this. A guy, he has a company that makes custom jet skis that you flick a switch and this hood comes over and then all of a sudden it's shaped like a shark or a dolphin and it turns into a sub. And it can only go down about 6 feet. So yeah, you're not going down deep. But the force of you going down pushes the bottom of the craft up so you shoot out of the water like a dolphin. It was so cool.
Almost sounds like something that Tintin would have discovered whilst trying to get away from a bad guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This, it looked like 30s or like Indiana Jones style.
Yes.
That sort of thing. I was so on board with this.
Speaking of Indiana
Jones. They're only like
Jones.
$120,000.
I was going to ask what it retailed for.
Yeah, that's pretty cheap.
So, okay. So if people want to put it on their wish list for Christmas, because it's coming up soon, this will give their family and friends time to save.
It's a few months.
Yeah, that's right. How long, did they go into how long these things take to make?
A while.
Okay.
They didn't, there wasn't a lot of specifics on there. The only specifics I gleaned that because Two Chains is 6'5", he was too tall to go in this particular one, so he made his producer that's deadly afraid of water do it. And he wore like a Louis Vuitton wetsuit that was worth $7,000 or something.
Goodness.
Because that's what this show is.
Most expensiveness.
Yeah, it's the most expensive.
I can't even say it.
It was great.
It sounds ridiculous.
It's
I love
so
every
ridiculous.
Second of it.
I'm really on board with it. I think it's paired up with a show called King of the Road, which is from Thrasher magazine, which if you were into skate culture in the early 90s, Thrasher was your jam.
Weird. I've never heard of it before.
Thrasher are great. And it feels like that old school late 80s, early 90s skate culture that Spike Jonze was so important in.
Right.
But it's basically like that combined with Jackass type thing of three crews of skaters competing for massive sponsorship from Thrasher and a lot of extra coverage and stuff like that. And it's a tour for 13 days and each day they go to a different city and get set a bunch of dumb tasks that they have to do to earn points.
Okay.
And that's it.
It's a TV
and
show.
And people get hurt.
That's great.
All the time.
Oh, right.
All the time. Like there was one bit where they had to, now I'm not a skater, so I don't know all the terms. But
you've heard Avril Lavigne's song, so surely you must know some of them.
Hey, it's complicated. wrong song. But basically, like doing ollies up onto a handrail that's on fire.
She's gone.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Go again. Start again.
That's okay. Chad Kroger would give you a hug, I'm sure. Doing like
ollies, yeah, that sounds like
doing
something.
Ollie up onto a handrail that's on fire. And you've got to skate down this long handrail. And inevitably, you fall off that onto the flames.
Oh.
It's so baller. I'm just not ever involved in anything like that. But it was really cool.
It sounds fully sick.
It's fully sick.
Fully sick, bro.
I won't be watching every episode because, you know, it's an hour-long show. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot to watch.
Sort of
dickheads.
Sounds like it's going to do the same thing.
Every episode.
Yeah.
They do similar sorts of things. Okay. If you're really into cool skate tricks, then I'm sure you get a lot more out of it. But if you just like shenanigans, it's worth a bit of a look.
Cool.
See if it's your type of thing.
Nice podcast. They make them for men.
Quickly, though, Running Wild with Bear Grylls finished out the season.
Mm-hmm.
I had last week's episode to catch up on, which was Scott Eastwood, who was more interesting than I expected.
Oh. Hmm.
Turns out his dad is a real hard ass. Who would have thought that Clint Eastwood would wait, you know?
Yeah, really.
Scott got into some trouble when he was about 17, so his dad organised for him to go and live in the wilderness for 3 months.
Oh, that's a thing. I remember seeing shows
troubled
about
teens.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would have
go and
them.
Teach him to harden up and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, he talks about that as a very formative
So he would have
experience.
Done quite well with Bear Grylls then.
They did quite well.
Yeah.
Then this week's episode was someone who did not do nearly as well as I expected, Roger Federer.
Oh, is that why he bowed out? Of the actual tennis playing?
Quite possibly.
Okay.
Because they went somewhere real cold in Switzerland.
And really?
Like, yes.
So up a mountain.
Well, and scaling down water, frozen waterfalls and this sort of stuff. But they told some interesting stories. But the most interesting thing was at one point Roger went to pick something up and his hands were that cold that he couldn't quite grip. And Bear reached across to help, touched his hand. He's like, oh, my goodness. And showed the camera and the callus on Federer's hand. Just looked like a second wrist in the middle of his palm or something
really?
Like that. You know, he's held that racket
I was gonna say,
for his whole life.
Years. Whack. Whack. Mm. So, yeah, that was my big takeaway of...
That's kind of like people who play guitar. One of their hands, the fingertips will be very calloused and the other will just sometimes have longer fingernails so they can...
Yes, pluck.
Pluck, that's the word. Mm. Oh, you've been doing a lot of watching.
I got two more.
Yeah, go.
So I watched an old Drop the Mic, which I somehow missed.
Uh-oh.
And it's got a throwdown between Richard Marx and Kenny G.
No, that's amazing.
Kenny G's got rhymes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard him speak or sing.
Well, that was part of the joke of it. And, like, he can't talk in a microphone without holding a saxophone. So he did his rap battle holding a sax.
That's how you know it's him.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly. Well, if you tune in halfway through the episode, there's no context for who that guy is.
And Richard Marx wouldn't have a mullet anymore, I hope.
No.
So we may not ever recognise him either.
No. Richard Marx looks like... Richard Hammond.
Right.
Mm.
Yeah, right.
More polished and less English. He's done very well. He's married to Daisy Fuentes, who's...
I remember her.
Yeah.
She did funniest videos for American, obviously, not the Australian one.
Mm.
You'd know her face, Steph. She's looking at me. You'd know her.
Okay.
And the last one I'll say, I'm hoping you've seen, was The Death of Stalin.
Yes, I've seen that one.
I had been waiting for that and it had been in my pile and I'd been waiting until I'd gotten through enough of the backlog for this show that I could sit down and watch it properly.
Yeah.
And as soon as it finished, I was like, oh, I've got to watch the thick of it again. So I've just restarted watching The Thick of It again. Right. It's a great film.
It is a great film, yeah. And this one's all set around literally the death of Stalin and how his cronies all wrestle and elbow for attention in the wake of that. But and they all do it with English accents, so it's not...
It's just no one's trying. Yeah. Steve Buscemi, Jeffrey Tambor, all these guys just talking in their normal voice.
Yeah, Michael Palin.
And does it take you out of it?
Not at all. At first it's, wait, what? And then you just get used to it. Yeah.
But lots of the bit players from all the other Armando Iannucci stuff have small roles popping up through there. They may be a conductor or an operator or something in the background. So if you've seen all the other stuff, it's a fun game of playing who's he slotted in elsewhere.
Mm.
Because he's clearly gotten a lot larger budget post-Veep to go and make a film. And his writing, for my money, is second to none.
Mm.
Just his turns of phrase... Mm. Malcolm Tucker is probably my favourite character ever. I was talking about this with Linz, my partner, the other night, and because we watched the first two seasons of The Thick of It, and then there's 2-hour-long specials before it goes into season 3. And during that period, the lead character, or not lead, but the main minister that we were following, had some awful things happen off screen that he couldn't come back to the show anymore.
Right.
So this 2-hour special, the 2-hour specials, they basically start panicking and spinning plates of how do we realign the show to not be around that character.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they started giving Malcolm Tucker some heart and showing that despite the fact that he treats everyone awful, he's actually really sympathetic and looking out for these people's best interests, even though he treats them like dirt.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this kind of cool thing of, that would have never happened if the backstage stuff wasn't taking place, and then we wouldn't have him as the 12th Doctor.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's one of those what if universe games.
Mm. Once again, it's the butterfly effect.
Yeah.
Every couple of weeks, we somehow manage to talk about the butterfly effect. I don't know how it happens.
Better than the grandfather paradox. If we're only going to talk about one paradox, let's just stick with the common stuff.
Yeah, fair enough. I will Wikipedia that one later.
It's Back to the Future.
Oh, of course.
If you go back in time...
Then you are your own grandfather.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're Marty McFly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
Sorted.
We've got more Handmaid's chat coming up for you very soon, as well as the quiz. But Steph, you and I sat down together. I missed half of it, but I still managed to enjoy.
Yeah.
We watched an Aussie comedian do good.
Mm.
Filmed at the Opera House.
Hannah Gadsby's Nanette special.
Mm. Yeah, I've seen that one too, yeah.
Fabulous. And I know it's...
Wasn't it great?
It really is.
So many people had been talking about it and I had it on the list to watch and then just for some reason I just pressed play the other day and I couldn't get enough of it. It was
phenomenal.
It was the most inspiring piece of a personal story done as a, you know, it was a comedy show. It was her stand-up show. But you kept forgetting it was a stand-up show because she was so honest and so raw, and the jokes like her thread through it was it only released the tension. And she, you know, kept saying that she was creating the tension and she would only give you a joke if releasing the tension was absolutely necessary. But my goodness, that woman has gone through a lot. And how she made art history so amusing and so funny, I thought that was fantastic.
So when clever.
She was talking about, yeah, all the different things to then lead into, you know, the climax of the story and the horrible, horrible things she's endured in her life. It was phenomenal. I will watch it again. I absolutely will watch it again.
It does feel, it feels to me like a, I don't think usually you can watch those stand-up comedy specials twice. You know, you mm-hmm. kind of get it, you feel, but I feel like that's worth a rewatch. Mm.
I think so too, and certainly the way she's written it. So at the first, you know, yeah. for the first half hour or so, it is jokes and it's legitimately funny, but then you know, she yeah. starts to take you on a journey and does callbacks to those earlier jokes
yes.
that you make you see them in a new light. So I do think probably mm. watching it again would yeah. help, and you'd see more of a process come out now that you know that where
exactly.
it's going to take you. But yeah,
it was amazing. And we were talking about, you know, how does she remember the whole thing? And you know,
because it was all very succinct. There were no ums and ahs. It all seemed like the pauses were very intentional. Yeah. Mm. But then, you wondered, didn't you?
Well, I said I know she's got the thread and she's got the idea of where it is, but she was so passionate in what she was saying. I said most of that. Hands down, I think she was speaking from the heart because you could see her eyes watering up and getting really red. I mean, it was filmed beautifully as well mm. for just being a stand-up show in the Opera House. It was filmed beautifully. But you saw her, you know, getting that passion and almost spitting these words out and this anger and this thought. And I was
the
like,
energy could,
yes.
you could see on, yeah. On the screen for sure. Imagine being there that
I
night.
Because I'd read some of the pieces as well, yeah. and there are a lot of them yeah. being shared, and I'd said, okay, I will stay yeah. with that. And then there were more pieces. I think, all right, calm down. How good can this
yes,
be?
Yes, that's what I thought
yeah.
too.
Yeah, but it genuinely is. So if you've got a bit of cynicism, I was with you on that.
Yeah.
yeah.
She's phenomenal because I knew she was a stand-up. I'd seen her on...
Please Like Me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She was a great character in Please Like Me, but I'd seen her in stuff before those sort of ABC, ha-ha, funny, you yeah. know, mm. things, which are great, you know, don't get me wrong. I'm not sort of playing them down, but to see her on stage like that, I've just gone, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, there were like I could feel genuine chills up
absolutely.
My spine, particularly towards the end as it was crescendoing.
Yeah.
What an and to be able to say that she's an Australian is
isn't she
awesome.
The only... female who has a comedy special on Netflix, and for her
I believe
to be
so.
An Australian woman as well. Just wonderful. Absolutely. And it's not slapstick, it's not rude or, you know, it's not what I call teenage boy humour, which a lot of those comedians I find head down that path of just being crude for the sake of being crude, swearing for the sake of swearing. She didn't hit that at all. She was very, very succinct, very mature in her thoughts. That's great.
Yeah. If you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. Are we ready for a quiz?
Yeah.
I am.
Now, Tom's usually very good at these, but I'm trying to throw him a curveball because we're...
Today, I think I'm outside the box.
You never know, though. You never know. Because, Fiona, we've got you here mm-hmm. and we're going to be talking a lot of Handmaid's predictions and sort of overall what we felt about this season, I thought, well, it's got to be a Handmaid's-related quiz.
Mm.
But I'm doing it one step to the left or right, depending on where you're standing. It's Elizabeth Moss roles. Which one's which? So I'm going to give you a sort of a synopsis rundown of the character, and then you've got to guess what movie or TV show it's from.
Okay.
And bonus points. I always forget to count them. But bonus points if you can give me the character's name.
Ooh.
I know, right?
I do feel like Tom's going to be good at this.
He's looking at me in a very scared manner.
No,
I don't think he's going to be good at it.
He's good with character names. You're good with movie names.
I'm cataloguing now.
Yeah, you're right.
Me too, and I think I've got three.
I'm seeing posters, but I really can't remember the titles. Like, you know, that one.
The one where she's standing.
Played,
yeah.
That woman.
She's got hair.
Yeah. The guy that wears the shirt.
Yeah, the guy with the shirt, exactly. All right, here's the first one. Her roomies, Lisa, Georgina, and Susanna, are all a little bit crazy. She had a moment with gasoline once. Probably should have regretted it. Yes, Steph.
Girl Interrupted.
It's Girl Interrupted.
Yes.
Yeah. Have you got any idea of the character's name?
No, but she has an eating disorder and she keeps a chicken under her bed. I remember that.
It's been a long time since I saw that movie, of course, with Winona Ryder and Angelina Jolie won the Oscar. Yeah, for that.
Can you give us the first letter of her?
P. Yeah.
Penny.
So close.
Percy.
It's you would call a bird it? You would call a bird
Polly.
This.
Yes.
Good work. Good work. Good work.
All right, I'm out now.
you're going? All right, I'll see you later. All right. Isn't too sure which side of the ditch she likes more. Likes to solve puzzles. Is a bit of a fan of Brienne of Tarth, James Delos, and Nicole Kidman. Yes.
Top of the Lake.
Yes. Do you remember the character's name?
No.
Only reason I remember is because my mother's name, Robin.
Robin.
Yeah, Robin.
It's my middle name, but anyway.
Oh, you'll never forget it now. That's right. Or at least not till the end of this episode.
She was in that show.
Are you serious? She's the main character.
Yeah, but she looks different.
She's got dark hair and she isn't wearing red. Mm. Okay, fair enough.
It was the wind.
She took them off. I didn't know who she was.
Let's try this one. Starts a relationship with a married man.
Mad men.
No. Oh. Had a tumultuous relationship with her mother, who is a bit radical. Is a fan of... Yes?
This is going to be June Osborne.
It's wow. June. Handmaid's Tale. That's right.
A great way to describe it.
That was the longest. That took me the longest to rewrite. Yeah. Also known as...
Offred.
That's right. But we don't like to call it that anymore.
No.
We don't like to call it that. Let's have this one. This is the second last one, Tom, so you've still got time to sort of redeem yourself.
Okay.
Okay. Finds creepy guys at work pretty hot, but not Mad as hot man. As... Yeah. Character's name? Anybody remember?
Is it June?
No. No.
Betty?
No.
Peggy.
Oh, Peggy.
Peggy. And Peggy, well done. Oh, that's hilarious. Okay, last one. So now you've got to try and figure out, is everything that you've seen her in been mentioned? Side note, apparently she was in Picket Fences.
Ooh, must have been little.
I didn't leave that one in. I thought that'd be a little bit too hard. Yeah, she was, just a kid. All right, here we go. Started a relationship with her dad's employee, gets kidnapped, all thanks to her dad's job.
Ransom? No.
I was sure I'd be the only person who hadn't seen this.
Taken
it's a
three.
Political. No, it's a TV show.
Is she the first
drama.
Daughter?
She's the first daughter.
24?
I love they both had the question mark.
Yeah. Yeah. So much confidence in both of them. I think Martin Sheen was in it.
Oh, West Wing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh. She was the third daughter.
Wait, okay. Not the one that marries Julie Hill?
As someone who hasn't seen it, all I know, based on what I read, was that she was the third daughter but was in it more than the other two.
Yeah.
And she had a relationship with a aide.
Yes. Yeah, that's something. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And got kidnapped and someone tried to kill her as well, apparently.
Yes. It was a big hubbub at the time because it was an interracial relationship on screen. Oh. In the mid-90s. Still a bit tisk-tisk.
Well, right. All right, well done, everybody. Thank I feel you. Like...
We didn't disgrace ourselves.
No,
yeah,
no.
We did admirably.
We shared it out, too. Yeah.
Elizabeth Moss is the real winner.
Spoiler alert. In 3, 2, 1... You have been warned.
Let's get into Handmaids. We haven't had a proper chat about it, have we, on this podcast? But I know that you have, Fiona on Eyes of Gilead. You guys definitely had a lot to talk about. I almost felt like that last episode, last podcast, you could have gone on for longer.
Probably could have, yeah. So in fact, we have, because we're doing one after that too.
Which is great.
Season finale.
Mm. Now, you also said that you interviewed Aunt Lydia. I kind of want to get to that first.
Yeah, right. So, well, that's going to be in our finale episode.
Fantastic.
Had an hour with Anne Dowd.
Wow.
In her apartment in Coogee, just sitting around in her dining room. Yeah, we did a special episode just recording there.
That's amazing.
Is she anything like Aunt Lydia?
At polar opposite.
Yeah.
Like, could not have been nicer.
I couldn't imagine there'd be many people like Aunt Lydia.
Yeah, right.
She's a one of a kind.
Yeah. But, you know, she has to be because Aunt Lydia does have that kind of sugary side to her as well. She cares for her girls and...
Jesus. I was trying to think who is the most confusing character for not just audience but people within Gilead to try and figure out. And I think Serena, for me, still is the most confusing. But I think Aunt Lydia is very confusing as well. Mm. She does all these horrible things that I forget that she's done. Mm. And then, you know, she's good work, girls. Yeah. Very proud of you. Like, what? I need a flashback.
I know, right?
Well, there was that slight moment of
she mentioned a couple of hints.
Yeah.
She's carrying a lot of guilt about something.
Yeah, and I kept waiting for that to progress further, but it just...
I think they know we want it, so they're not going to give it to us.
Yeah, true.
You're so mean. You're so mean. And something different about this show that, Tom, you would know in things like Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, all those sort of shows, you lose main characters like there's no tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
So you don't even learn... These days you're like, I'm not going to get attached because, you know, Rick Grimes is probably out, that kind of thing. But in Handmaids, you actually do feel each episode you feel terribly worried about characters because they're there the whole time.
Mm.
And it's not that many main characters in the show.
No.
Mm-hmm. That you feel very attached to them and the stakes feel very, very high.
Sure.
So that when you do lose a character, which is not that often really, it's devastating. It's shocking.
Mm.
I mean, Eden.
I know. Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah, I didn't think that was going to go that direction at all. I found her a stressful character because I was constantly waiting for the other
shooters. She was a bit of gear. I was like, she's going to just rat on everyone.
Yeah.
We all piled on like that. Everyone thought it.
Yeah.
But I think that was a little trick from the screenwriters just to show how easy it is to happen. And
absolutely.
What happens in Gilead. They just suspect everyone all the time.
And yeah.
Yeah.
And this has said a lot about Gilead and Handmaids, is that the reason people get into it and can feel so much invested in it is because it feels so real but slightly just a couple of steps off to the side. So that the fear, you feel the fear because you can almost relate.
I know there's been a lot of think pieces about, you know, not wanting to even watch season two because they're saying, oh, you know, it's just too violent. And I think they were calling it violence porn, basically, you know, violence for the sake of it. Whereas, you know, a lot of the creators and the writers and the directors, and they're all saying, just turn on the news. It's what's happening right outside our door. And even Margaret Atwood, when she wrote the book, took all those tiny little pieces from different societies around the world. So it does exist. And I was talking to people only the other week where they said, oh, no, I get a little bit feisty when I watch it. And I was like, now is the time to watch it. Get angry about it. Turn it on, watch it, and get angry because now is the time. And the show is just, it's too well written. And I think I will harp on, I don't care. I think it's the women's influence in there, and that writer's room is full of women. There are lots of episodes directed by women, and I think that is the crucial. It's the crux of this show of why it's working so well and why it is so thought-provoking. You know, it's the voice, basically.
Now, Fiona, you've spoken to a few people who have stuff to do with the show.
Yeah.
Has there been any discussion or talk from their side about how maybe the second season they felt a lot of pressure? Because, Tom, the book finishes pretty much at the end of the first season, so the second season is all uncharted territory.
Well, then the book picks up years later, so we're sort of in that gap. So it's ultimately like it's a future time where Gilead is no more. So we're kind of in that kind of territory where, you know, like they find a box of tapes and it's the tapes of this mysterious handmaid. So, we're in that void. But, yeah, we interviewed Bruce Miller, the showrunner and the creator of the series. Yeah, incredible. so I got to pick his brains. But he was saying he was writing like mid through series one when he was writing series two because he just had to think of you know, the end point of all of these things. So, yes, they did feel pressure, but, you know, they've sort of got this end journey in sight. But then again, he said it could go to 10 seasons, you know.
Really?
I mean, I don't know about that, but...
You know, credit to them, because I found every episode it took a direction I never predicted.
Absolutely. Just this season or...?
Mainly season two, yes. Okay. I mean, season one did follow the book, so I was quite aware. But even, you know, the first 4 minutes of episode one of season two, I could never have predicted that it went the way it went. And that happened every episode.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the stress and the anxiety watching every episode, I'm glad that it was only released one at a time because I wouldn't have been able to cope.
Yeah, it's actually one of those shows that for me, because I know the first season we could binge.
Yes. Which I did, yeah.
Mm. And I would try two in a row and I'd go, oh, I
can't do it.
It's too much. And there's not only is it too overwhelming, but there's just too much information.
Sure.
Mm.
And it kind of, if I watch too much, it washes over me. So to be able to watch it week by week and be able to chat and listen to people talk about it, I've definitely got, I think, a better understanding of this season than last season. But when I think back to that first episode, it feels like ages ago.
I know.
A lifetime ago. 13 episodes seems really long in television these days, doesn't it? And I hope they don't think that the fact that they've chosen 13 episodes has washed over on us. No, I understand the symbolism there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are some of the standout moments for you in this season?
Well, let me think.
They don't have to be happy ones, because then you'll be able to think of them really quickly.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other sides of Serena, like, I think this has kind of been the Serena season, whereas the first season was Aunt Lydia is this incredible villain, and like June kind of getting accustomed to June and what this world is that she's in, it was established. But this season it's Serena, and what's her story, and is she going to flip, and is she going to help out?
She's so thought-provoking,
yeah,
isn't she?
Yeah. You know, she was an ally in a couple of one and a half episodes there, sort of, one and a quarter. And then in the ending of the season.
She was almost a broken woman, the ending. I just thought that has just drawn her out.
There was somebody at work today talking about it, and he said he didn't buy it. Oh. He said that Serena's going to try and pin it all on everybody else.
Well, I think she immediately regrets it once she's done it. I think once June's out of eyesight, it'll be, oh, my God, what have I done? So I don't think she's part of the resistance yet.
No. Do you think she could be?
Well, for a while there it was sort of looking like that. And, you know, like, it's not going to be just the handmaids getting themselves out here. It's going to take more than that.
And we saw that with the Marthas.
Yeah, of course. In that incredible scene.
It was great.
It was great to see which side the Marthas stood on finally.
Because you weren't sure in the first season at all.
You never knew. Even right up towards the end, you never knew where the Marthas stood. And it was great. It was wonderful.
You felt so much euphoria, and then I screamed at the television at the end like everybody else has. But on Eyes of Gilead, you were talking about the fact that it reminded you of Underground Railroad back in the slavery times, and it reminded me of a book, and I just had to look it up then because I want to make sure that if people actually want to read or listen to it, it's by Colson Whitehead, and it's called The Underground Railroad, and it's amazing. And you may be able to pick up a little extra in the history of why they introduced the Marthas doing that.
Mm. Interesting.
Worth. I really enjoyed that book, and as soon as I saw the Marthas doing that, I went,
yeah.
Having said that, didn't pick up on the fact that she stopped and looked at a train. Like, symbolism to the max. Didn't pick that up. But how many people do you reckon across Australia and the world screamed at the television at June at the end when she decided not to get in and then decide to call the kid Nicole?
Yes.
She's going to regret that. Serena's going to go back to being Serena again.
Mm-hmm.
And she'll go, damn, I wish I said Holly.
Do you know one bit that I think was the standout scene for the whole season for me? And it wasn't a hugely dramatic scene, but it was the scene when all the handmaids were in the grocery shop and they just turn to each other and say, hello, my name is June. You know, I'm this.
I think that was standout.
And it just stuck with me, and I keep thinking and thinking about it. And I know the theme of the season was resistance, but for me, the theme of this season was titles, was women's titles, and using their real names. And then you hear June have that big speech. I think it was the beginning of the last episode where she was just saying, you know, wife, mother.
That's right.
Yeah, it was the roles.
It's all those roles, and then it turned into just all, you know, the derogatory names that women have been given over the years. And I thought, no, that's it. That's, for me, that's what the theme of this season was. And I just found that particular very small scene, and it was lightly lit, which is very different for a handmaid's,
true,
you know, scene. That was the standout for me. That,
now,
introducing each other.
One thing that I want to know, and I maybe will see it in season three, is why was the escape kept a secret from Emily and June? Why?
Well, I think Emily was a late ring in. I think it was because of her going Aunt Lydia that they probably thought, let's best get you out.
Yeah.
Especially with her commander, who is part of the resistance now, apparently.
My gosh, I just want to see more and more of
her. With June, I'm not sure.
Is it because we see the whole world mainly through June's eyes, and that
maybe,
you know, created that kind of, I guess, climax, because we didn't know what was going on either, nor did she.
Yeah, and both times she's been announced, like, now, go.
Yeah.
Oh, God, okay.
Yeah. Then what?
Yeah. She doesn't get it. Maybe on her report cards, you know, it says, does not do well with planning. just let her go.
Works well under pressure.
Yeah, works very well under pressure. So what do you think we can expect from season three?
Well, I'm thinking now that Emily hopefully is on her way to Canada with the baby, that gives us another plant over the border who hopefully will see a bit more fight back coming towards Gilead.
Yeah, because there's not been much at
been.
All.
It's been quite weak, really.
Diplomatic kind of slap on the wrist.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping to see her stir up a bit of trouble that side, because she's been such a feisty character that is going over there now. Because Moira's been sort of stuck in survivor guilt this season. We haven't seen a lot of her. Mm. But in terms of June sticking around, well, where's she going?
Is she going to go back to the house? Is she going to actually go underground?
For what point would she... Why would she go back?
For Nick, I guess.
To Hannah. I think her only line to Hannah, Fred knows where Hannah is.
Oh, yeah, right.
But she's not going to be real welcome in that household.
No.
Yeah, but there is this new mystery commander who she's only just met, but she knows that he's on her side. So if she can seek him out somehow, he can hide out there,
hopefully.
How could
she find him? Mm. She could find him through the Marthas, maybe?
Mm.
Now she knows that there's a network of them.
I don't think Rita's going to be real pleased she didn't go, though.
Oh.
Sort of,
well, how many more people are going to be happy to help her? That's twice now that she's come back.
Mm. Yeah, she may have burnt her Martha bridges.
Yeah, and she can't yo-yo back in and out all the time.
No.
And also for storyline perspective, to have her keep going through the same thing over and over again. And that sort of takes me back to one thing I was thinking about during this season, is that they don't give you much hope because it's Gilead, it's a very depressing place. But at the same time, they have to give the audience some hope every now and then. It was few and far between, but, you know, like letting each other know what their real names were, that sort of thing. It's a little ray of sunshine. Yeah. And I guess that last bit for us was that little ray of sunshine of knowing that Emily and the baby were gone. But I think there's a fair bit of work to go in this third season.
Yes.
It's going to be a lot of unfunness. but we've had a lot of fun today. Fiona, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
And talking Gilead with us.
Just try and stop me. I'm talking about that show so much this week.
It's been amazing. You'll probably want a break from it.
I think so.
But you've still got one more episode of the podcast?
We do. We have the finale, which features our epic and out interview. So,
fantastic. Can't wait.
We are going to be not only watching that, but linking it also on our Facebook page and whatnot. Steph, thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Fiona.
Thank you very much.
And Tom.
Ahoy, hoy.